Hey everybody, my name is Jeremy Foster. Welcome to Brain Dump on Node.js. This is a little bit of an experimental video course by my colleague Kat and I. How are you doing, Kat?
I'm doing well, Jeremy. Yeah, I'm really excited.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited about Node.js. Kat's trying to learn it, and so we're both kind of coming up to speed, and we're going to do a little bit of our thinking out loud on a recording so that maybe it'll be of benefit to you. If you are a Node wizard, then it'll probably just be painful watching us struggle. But if you're trying to learn Node, then hopefully there's going to be some stuff in here that will help you, and you can watch us learn. So we decided to do our first course on getting started. That sounds like a good place to start. And so we're going to do things like install Node and get our editor and our development workspace all figured out and just kind of get oriented, and that's all we're going to do. So it's going to be a fairly short video, and then we'll figure out what our next episodes are going to be and what we're going to be talking about, what we're going to be learning. So, Kat, right. Anything you want to say about your interest in Node and why you want to break into this space?
Yeah. So I'm kind of like completely new to Node. I want to jump into it. I normally do game development, and so I kind of wanted to build that up, do more multiplayer stuff, do a lot more back-end development, and Node seems perfect. It's like super lightweight, and a lot of game developers already use it, and so I'm kind of wanting to like explore that space a bit and see what cool, awesome games I can create.
Wonderful. Yeah, the cool thing about Node for me is that I'm kind of a one-burner guy. I don't like switching gears too much. I get confused really easily. And so I like the fact that I get to kind of stay in the same space writing the same language. I'm writing JavaScript, whether it's on the client or on the server, and that just feels good and right to me. JavaScript's a fine and dandy language. Nothing wrong with it. I love C# as well. There are a lot of languages that I really like. But JavaScript kind of feels right, and I like this fact that I can use it here and there on the client, on the server, on my robot, on my little IoT device, whatever it is. So that's pretty wonderful. So I think maybe to get started, what I'll do is just let everybody know how you would go about installing Node. And the easiest way, in my opinion, if you're on Windows, by the way, is to go to nodejs.org and install it just straight up from the web. There, if you like to stay at the command line, and a lot of people that are working with Node like to stay at the command line, and I love staying at the command line, but when you're just installing Node, it's just as easy to just jump out to nodejs.org and do it from there.
Yeah, I'm not too, I like the command line. The command line's fine, but I'm like, oh yeah, why not do it with like the pretty UIs and stuff that are created.
Well, the web page makes it pretty easy to figure out exactly how to install it. Can you figure it out from this page how to install, Kat?
Yes. Just hit the install, the yellow button.
That's what I would do too. They make it pretty obvious. Yeah, you hit this, and one thing that might not be obvious is that in doing this, you're not just installing Node, you're installing Node and NPM. Node is the engine, and NPM is what's called the Node Package Manager, and that's how you download and install packages for the Node applications that you write. It's absolutely critical because they're one of the huge advantages to Node is the fact that there's something like 150,000 packages in the Node store, in the NPM registry. So that's pretty great.
Oh, wow. So, Jeremy, where would I find all of these, packages if I wanted to start like downloading them or seeing the possibilities of what I can do with Node?
Awesome. Yeah, let's look at that next. This is the setup wizard. I'm not going to walk through it because I've already got it on my machine, but you'll probably have no trouble doing next, finish, and then you'll be done. It will ask some questions about if you want to have your path modified, and you do, because that means that it's going to manipulate the path variable in Windows such that whenever you're on the command line, wherever you're at, you're going to be able to call Node and call NPM, so that's a really good thing.
Oh, okay, cool.
The website that we just went to, Kat, was nodejs.org, and that's Node. But then there's also npmjs.org, and that's invaluable. NPM is the basically represents this huge, gigantic repository. And as you can see, there are now 171,000 total packages. Okay, so yeah, this is NPM, and this is where you find kind of everything. And I feel like they've got this website arranged really well because you get to look right here at the first page and see what people are using a lot. By using, I mean that they're installing it for their apps. And so it's really popular. So a ton of people are using Browserify and Express and PM2 and Grunt and Bower. And all of these are very, very popular. And you can, this is a very definitive way to determine that they're popular. I think that popularity is really, really important because as you're writing this stuff, you want to figure out, is this going to go forward? Are other people writing this? You know, or am I using a package that's not going to be supported? It's not going to be around in a little while. And I should just stay away. Okay, so we have installed Node and NPM now. And we looked at npmjs.org, which is a big index of all of the repositories. Actually, let me show you, like, if you're looking for a certain library, like if you're looking for Lodash, this is kind of a utility library. You search for Lodash, and you click on it, and it tells you just a little bit of information about Lodash. All the packages have this unique name, which is helpful. You can use that to install it or whatever. And most of them are going to have a link back to, if it's an open source project, a link back to the location on GitHub where that project is. And that's really helpful because now I can say Lodash, how's that being developed? Oh, here it is, and here's exactly what's going on with Lodash. Now you can jump in and create issues or look at issues or whatever. So npmjs ends up becoming a really good go-to place to find exactly what you're looking for. Let's say you're looking to integrate with Azure. You can search for Azure, and you're going to find all these packages about various. These are all Node packages that have something to do with Azure.
Right.
Okay, so now we probably want to jump right to the command line. I don't know about you, but I use PowerShell as my command line. I don't really use most of the PowerShell features, but I've played with Commander and CMD2 and a number of other command utilities, and I just I don't use that many of the features of a command line, and PowerShell does what I need. So,
yeah, I'm very much PowerShell out of the box. I don't use a lot of command line, but when I do, PowerShell can handle most of what I want. Yeah. So,
you can see here that I'm jumping directly to my code folder. This is like my root folder where all my repositories are. And that's a PowerShell script. If you're interested in that, you can use something like Notepad, if that's what you have, to edit your profile. And that's going to edit the text file, the .ps1 file that PowerShell looks at when it first starts up. And you can do things in there. Like if you look at mine, you can go down to the end here, and you can see CD code. And that's what sends me to this code directory. I've also commented out my incredibly awesome ASCII art here. Let me go ahead and this is all important. So now let me reopen my, and there we are. I've got my ASCII art.
Ah, I love it. That's awesome.
It's got to be. Okay, so now I
need to create my own profile, maybe do like an ASCII kitty art.
There you
for
go.
Like cat.
There you go. Yeah. It's a must have. It's just a little bit inspiring every time you open your command line, which is good. Okay, so now we have the Node command. It actually does something. In this case, it opens a REPL. We're like inside of Node, and I can Control C a couple times. Control C, Control C to get out. Actually, by the way, I can hit Control D to get out as well, to just kind of jump right out of that Node REPL. But as you can see, I have that Node command, and I can do Node V, and it'll tell me what version of Node I have installed. I also have NPM, so now I can NPM, and it doesn't do anything if I just type NPM except tell me you were supposed to type something else. Here's all the things you could type.
Right.
And so I can type things like NPM install or NPM update or whatever, and we'll look at those in just a second. So those are the two basic commands that you get, Node and NPM. And let's say that we want to do something in the REPL real quick and just kind of see the basics of Node here. This is JavaScript. Now, one thing that is not immediately clear to everybody, though, is that Node.js is not a JavaScript program. It's a C library. It's a C application that allows you to write JavaScript for your program. So it runs the JavaScript for you. It actually uses the open source V8 engine that powers Chrome to run your JavaScript. So it's kind of like it's faking a
Oh.
browser.
Yeah, that makes so much more sense now that you explained it. Like I read a bit about that and I was like, I still don't get it. But yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Like if you compare it to other web frameworks or application frameworks, I've heard people criticize it before and say JavaScript isn't as performant. Well, Node's not actually written in JavaScript. It just runs your JavaScript for you. It's a regular old C library. So, but here we are
Nice.
in Node at the REPL. REPL stands for Read Execute Print Loop. So I can just do things. It's like an immediate mode. So I can do things like I want to create myself a variable that is 10. And now it returns undefined because that statement itself doesn't return anything. But now I have x equal to 10. And I can do things like x plus 1, which obviously equals 11.
What?
So I'm writing JavaScript right here at the command line.
That is awesome. The things of
Oops.
JavaScript that I am un that I do not know.
And the JavaScript that it's translating is it's being translated by this V8 engine. And one of the criticisms about Node is that the V8 engine, in some ways, was getting old. There were some features that weren't in it. And that's why maybe you heard a rumor that IOJS branched off of or forked off of Node.js. Have you heard that?
I've heard a couple of friends talking about it, but
Well, the good news is that
my
they're.
node knowledge wasn't that great. I was like, Jeremy,
Well, the
tell
good
me
news is
more.
that they're merging back, so that's going to be good for the development community that we don't have these two different concepts to keep in our minds. But.
Right.
So that's the Node REPL. And before we jump into NPM, let's just say, let's make a quick and simple Node app. Like we just saw what it looks like to jump into the REPL and write some JavaScript, but let's do it as an actual JavaScript file. So to do that, I'm going to create a directory here, and I'll just call this playing around. And then I'll cd into the playing around directory. And this is an empty directory. But remember what I did before was var x equals 10, and then I output x plus 1. Let's just do
Right.
something like that. Well, what I'm going to need to do is I'm going to need to create a file, and I can call it whatever I want. I could call it foo.js, or I could call it pokey.js, or actually, I guess I just did. Didn't mean to do that. Let's go ahead and rename that. People tend to call these rename. Item pokey.js to app.js. Oh, I didn't use the right name. That should have worked. Okay. So now I have app.js and it does not contain anything, but I can edit this with my editor of choice. What's your editor of choice?
So I've been using the Visual Studio Code
Okay.
that just came out recently. I really like it, so
Yeah, me
I
too.
it's cross-platform, so I can use it on a Windows device or my Mac. So I, depending on where I am or what mood I'm in, I'll switch from device to device and put all my stuff in GitHub, and it just works seamlessly.
That's awesome. Well, I'm going to make sure that none of this feels like magic to folks if they're just getting started. I'm just going to use Notepad because if you can open it in Notepad, you know it's a simple concept, right?
Right, yeah.
All right, so let's open this in Notepad. And now let's type var x equals 10. And now instead of just typing x plus 1, we're not at the REPL. So what we need to do is we need to access the console and log out x plus 1, like that.
I
Okay,
see.
so that's a pretty simple Node app. It's just JavaScript. I wrote that and now I want Node to run it. So I'm going to go to File and Exit and Save. And then from here, I have this one file. I could type that out and you'd see that there's my code. But I want Node to run this. So I'm going to say Node app.js. And in fact, Node is a little bit fancy in that it says you don't have to put the .js. I know what you mean. You can just say Node app. So I'll say Node app and it'll say 11.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's about as simple as it gets.
Yeah, no libraries or no formal structure, no compiling. Or it compiled it really quickly because it's like 2 lines, but
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, it actually doesn't need to compile it because JavaScript is interpreted. And yeah, it's a scripting language, and so that's nice in a lot of ways. It can allow it to be more dynamic. It's one of the reasons why in certain situations it's slower than a compiled language, but oftentimes that doesn't hurt you at all. From the command line, you can actually just type code. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
That's
This is
super cool.
something I'll be using from now on.
You can say code this directory, and it will actually open this directory in Visual Studio Code. And so you're not only looking at your app.js here, but you're also looking at any other files that happen to be in that directory. They're all going to show up right there.
Oh, nifty.
Yeah, pretty handy. So I can click on app.js, and here we are editing this one program. Now I have IntelliSense here, which is super great because, for instance, if I say x right here, it knows that x is a number. And so if I say x dot, it knows what kinds of methods can be called on that. If I would have put the 10 in quotes, then it would know that x is now a string. Notice that it's calling it a string. I'm going to try to zoom into here to make sure that you can see it. X is now a string, and so it's going to give me a different set of methods. This is amazing. This is really, really helpful when you're writing JavaScript. One of the advantages of JavaScript, again, is that you have a lot of dynamic nature to it, but usually that comes at the cost of being able to determine types and stuff. But Visual Studio Code is giving you a lot of help right here.
Yeah, I do appreciate a good IntelliSense, especially working with Visual Studio.
Yeah.
Like Unity now can run Visual Studio instead of MonoDevelop, and it's so great when you have these huge games and files and so many objects in your game, and you're like, crap, I forget what this one version of this game object does, and then you just put a period, and it's like, here's what it does. This is all the things you can do, and it's like, oh, this is very helpful.
It really is. Yeah, the files that we're dealing with here, if I drop back down to the command line, it's just a text file, right? So I can use whatever I want to edit that. But there's some things that people should be aware of as options, because when I jump back into Visual Studio Code, I not only have some pretty color coding here and the facility of IntelliSense, but I also have some other things. Like if I have got a nice IDE, I've got the ability to search my entire code base, which is great. I also have the ability to initialize this as a Git repository and then work with it as a Git repository, do all my commits and so on. So let me go ahead and initialize this. Let's do our initial commit here. So there I've committed that first file. Now let me drop down here and you'll see that now if I show everything, what's the command to show everything? Do you remember? I'm not sure.
Isn't just ls? It won't show everything in there, I guess. No, won't just list everything.
No, it didn't. Because it's hidden on my machine, but I can open it in Windows
Right, the
Explorer here
dot.
and see it. It's actually created this Git folder now. So now this is a Git repository. Because I have Posh-git installed on my machine, I get things like this that help me out with telling me what branch I'm on and so on. And now let's jump back to code and say, let's add a change. Let's also console log my first change. There we go. I save that, and now in my Git console here, it says there's a change to app.js. And if I jump over here and refresh, let's actually clear the screen, you'll see that my Posh-git, this is called Posh-git or PowerShell Git, is telling me, hey, there are some changes here. There are no additions, and there are no file deletions, but you changed one file. And I go,
Right.
oh, well, that's super handy. So I can say Git status. And it will say this file has been modified. Well, Visual Studio Code is doing the exact same thing for me here. So let's go ahead and do at the command line first. Let's say git add everything. And now notice that I get green text saying this has been added. So now if I do a git status, it'll say app.js is a change ready to be committed. So I can commit that. I'll go ahead and put my message right here, my first change. So that's been committed, except it says that I don't have my email, which I wonder why I don't. That's pretty strange. Oh, I must have been from a reinstall of something. Let's just knock out that task. Done. Okay, we'll try this again. Actually, I'm not sure if it went ahead and did the commit, so I'll do a get status. And it says, great, yeah, it's been committed already. I'm on the branch, and there's nothing to commit, but I also don't have a remote repository, so there's no need to push this, but it's been committed. Now let's jump back here. Look at that. Code already picked up that there was a change there and has omitted it from there.
Awesome. Yeah, I like I said earlier, I love the Git with Visual Studio Code, because it's just like from machine to machine, I just have to download it, or even if it's a new machine, just go on to pull down the latest version and I can just keep going.
That's cool. I never really thought about that as an advantage of having of using code which is cross-platform, because yeah, like you said, then you can just push from one and pull from another.
Yep. And the formatting, everything stays the same, so you have that benefit instead of switching from text editor to text editor on different machines.
We also, whenever you have a capable IDE to help you out, you also have the ability to debug, and debugging in code is really cool. I can go in here and hit F9 on my keyboard, and I now have a breakpoint on that spot, and then I can hit go, and it's going to say, now hold on a second, in order to debug, you're going to need this config file. I actually love the way this works. There's no like magic going on behind the scenes. It just says, in order to do this function, you're going to have this certain file. Well, now this file is something that I can check in and share with my development team, because it's just another file. But it's created this file and said, what's the name of the file that needs to be launched, and what are some other parameters? And it writes the whole thing for me, so I don't have to worry about it. What's the port going to be that we're going to use as a proxy port? All these details that you don't need to worry about. But I can go ahead and now hit go, and it's going to run. So now my code is running, and if you switch over to this console window, you can see that it's kind of frozen here. I'm in the middle of running this code, and it's frozen. But over here in Visual Studio Code, I can see why, and that's because I've broken at this breakpoint. And while I'm at this breakpoint, notice that I can hover over X, and I can see that the value is 10. That's pretty cool. And I can also look over here at all my local variables, and I can find 10. I can find that X equals 10. Well, I can also go and inspect this and see what this is and what's inside of this, what's inside of require and module, and all of these things have a whole directory or a whole tree here that I can look through. I've used this extensively, for instance, when I'm doing something with IoT, and this is running on a remote board, and I don't know what the values all are. And so I like to be able to inspect it in context and see what my values are.
And how well does the debugger work with the different packages?
It works just fine, because all the various packages are just more JavaScript that's running. And so it's still able to debug those. And you know, you can dive into the dependencies that you've set and debug them, but usually that doesn't make sense. That's somebody else's code. You know, they've delivered it and it's supposedly bug free. And even if it's not, it might not be your job to do the debugging in theirs. It's your job to find the bugs in your own code. So you set your breakpoints in your own, but you might find that, hey, their library is doing something I wasn't expecting, and so I thought my X here was going to be 11, and now it's 12. And so I can step through this. I can say, now go to the next line, go to the next. Oh, here you can see that we've actually dived into Node.js. We've dived into a native module, and we're debugging that. That may or may not be what we want to do. All right, so I'll go ahead and stop that, and that's a really basic program.
Yay, learning so much already.
Yeah. I say we do a couple of requires and then call it a day. What do you think?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. There are three kinds of requires. You can require local. You can require a core module. And you can require I guess you would call this an NPM module. Okay?
Okay.
Now, to require local, I'm going to actually show you how to do that one last. It's the least common, although it's great, but it's the least common. So I'll show you the core and the NPM ones first. So an example of requiring a core module is this, var HTTP equals require HTTP. So it's super hard, right?
Yeah. I don't know if I can handle it, Jeremy.
You can do it. So the fact that this is a core module is not discernible other than the fact that the set of core modules is a limited set, and HTTP happens to be one of them. Okay, so when you
Okay.
say HTTP, it goes, yeah, I recognize that. That's one of my core modules. A few of the other ones, by the way, are FS and async, and I think there's one called crypto. That might not be core, I don't remember. There's various core modules that you might want to utilize. HTTP is one of them. Well, now once you've done this syntax is, just do require and then the name of the module, but then store that locally because I'm going to use it. And it's most
Right.
common to give it the same name as what the module is. So now you have a thing locally called HTTP that you have access to. So let's just do this. Let's just modify this program so that all we're doing is we're going to output HTTP. Okay? Remember in
Awesome.
JavaScript, you can just write an object out to the screen and it's going to basically turn that object into a string and show it. So let's see what this does. So I'm going to save that, jump back out. You can see that my debugger screen is still open and it kind of froze at this. Press any key to continue, and when I hit that, it'll just go away. So let's jump back
Okay.
to my console here, and I'm inside of my playing around. I still just have the one app.js. Remember where the settings file came from?
Was that from the module that we just
No,
downloaded?
actually, that was from when we said debug. Remember, and it said you need a
Right.
settings file. So it
Okay,
created,
yeah, and
actually,
it
that's not a
generated it.
file. I'm wrong. That is a directory. And there's a launch JSON in there.
Right, and it was the launch JSON that had all the cool automatically generated
Exactly. Yep.
stuff for us. Okay.
Yep. So
That
that's just
I
a
remember.
directory. And like I said, you can check that settings folder into your GitHub, and then other people that use this project get all those debug settings as well. So that's really handy.
Right.
Okay, so let's look real quick at our app.js. Does it look right? Yep, we're requiring HTTP and then we're printing it on the screen. So let's go ahead and run this. Node app, go. Bam. There's this big object that it prints
Oh.
out on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this object is just the HTTP object. Here's all the methods on it that we're able to call, get and request and client request and so on.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So just I guess it kind of looks like just JSON, but of the object.
Yeah, that's right. There's two things in JavaScript. There's JSON syntax, and then there's JavaScript object initializer syntax, and they
Okay.
look very similar. So, for instance, if I'm in here and I want to create something called X, and I want to create that as an object, I can just use curly braces, and inside those curly braces, I can say my var one is some value, and my var two is some value, and my var three, let's say, is a function.
Okay.
Okay, so I just created an object with two properties and a function on it using object initializer syntax. And the only thing that differentiates this syntax from JSON is that with JSON, these have to be in quotes as well, and they have to be double quotes. So I'll go ahead and make this work. Double quote, double quote, double quote, double quote, and I'm not allowed to have functions. And that makes sense, right? Because JSON is all
Right.
just data. It's not functionality, it's just data. So I can't have that. And now that is valid JSON syntax right there. So
I
when I
see.
say console log out HTTP, it logs out that object onto the screen and I get to look at it and it looks a lot like JSON.
Interesting. I did not know about the initializer syntax.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
So now, since I have this object, I mean, just printing it on the screen is not helpful, but I can do things like create server, and that's going to create a web server. I can do something like HTTP GET, and that's going to do a GET call, kind of like a jQuery AJAX function. There's lots of different things that HTTP is capable of doing, and all of that is possible for me now because I just required this core module. Now, one thing that you'll notice is that, like, if you use ASP.NET and you have the .NET framework, man, you have a whole lot of code that's written for you there. It's all built
Right.
into the framework. With Node, there's not very much built in. You have a few core modules and they do quite a few pretty cool things, but most of the code to help you in Node is in NPM.
Right.
Yeah.
And are the core modules listed out at that node js.org site, or is it like the npm
They are in the
js.conf?
documentation. So if we go
I
to
see.
node.js.org and look at the documentation, you'll find in here that I don't know if it's in the.
Oh, there's HTTP.
Yeah, here's the file system. I don't see a direct list, but yeah, there's HTTP. That's the core module. Crypto, like I mentioned. File system is the one that's called FS. And so here's all of the FS methods that can be called. So I guess this is kind of a list of the core
The
modules.
full modules.
Yeah. There might be a better way to just search for node core modules. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, awesome.
Okay, so those are the core modules. Now I said that there's another way to requ another type of require, and that is requiring an NPM module. So if I say var HTTP require HTTP, it says, I know that one. I don't even need anything. I have it. But if I say var express equals require express, it says, I don't have that one. I don't have express as one of my core modules, so I'm going to assume that that is found in the node modules folder. Okay? So now let's
Okay.
do this again. Let's console log express. There we go. And I'm going to drop down here to my file system. And do you see a node modules folder in here?
No.
I don't either. It doesn't exist. So let's go ahead and save this and try to run node app again. And it'll say, I can't find express. I looked at it for it as a core module and it didn't exist. So I looked for it in node modules folder and I couldn't even find a node modules folder. So in order to use something that's not a core module, you have to say npm install. And now it might not be clear at first that npm install is a command that's actually going to go to the web. From the command line, it's going to go to the web and it's going to look for whatever it is that you install. So I'm going to say install express. So it's pretty simple, right? npm install express and I say go. And it's going to install Express. Now, in installing Express, it's going to say, what dependencies does Express have? And there you can see them all listed out. Those are all the dependencies that Express has. And some of those, many of those probably, have their own dependencies. And so we just included a module and all of the modules that it eventually requires in one step by doing npm install. So
Nice.
now, if we say node app go, it says I can do that, and it exports the word express, which is just the two string on the express object. So instead of getting a big JSON-looking thing like we did with HTTP, we just get the word express. So it's there now. But if I were to take this, you usually don't want to check node modules into your GitHub repository or anything like that. This is just kind of a transient derivative folder. You want your
Right.
application to stand on its own, and so. I don't want to deliver this, but I do depend on Express. And so the way to handle that is to create for yourself a package JSON file. A package JSON file is a file that describes, among other things, it's just basically a bunch of metadata about your node
Application.
application. But among describing it, it also describes all of your dependencies. And they're really easy to make because all you have to do is say npm init, and it's going to take you through a wizard, and you can just hit enter to all of the questions, and it creates a package JSON file for you. So I
Oh,
say,
awesome.
what's that?
That's so cool. I was
Yeah.
going to ask, like, so for each project that I make, I can just do npm init and it will just
Yep.
package everything else.
Yep.
Can you do multiple, like, let's say you add more modules later on, will the package.json automatically update, or would you have to do npm init again to kind
No,
of
you'll
re
never do npm init again, but you will update the package JSON and I'll show you how. So remember
Awesome.
that I installed Express and it put it inside of this node modules. In fact, let's go look at it. There's Express. So it's in there. And I can even drill into it and look at its node modules folder. And there's all of its methods. And I can jump into fresh. And it's got, oh, it doesn't have any dependencies. So it doesn't have any node modules in it. But I can drill all the way in there.
Right.
And now I can jump back out. So, but what I want is if even if I remove node modules permanently, Now I'm back to this state where if I say Node app, it's going to give me this error. I don't have it. So what I want to do is I want to permanently say I need Express. This app requires Express. Remember before I said install Express? It's the same thing. I just say save. And by saying save, this installation does two things now. It's going to install, and then it's also going to save that into the package.json file. So let's type out the package.json file now. And notice that there's a dependencies section, and it says, I depend on Express.
Well, this is
cool because now watch this. Not only can I now say Node app, and it works just fine, but I can also remove the Node modules folder. And of course, now it's not going to work. Error. But I can just say npm install, and leave it at that. I don't have to tell it what I want to install. I just say npm install. And it says, OK, cool. I'll look inside your package.json file and see what you need, and I'll go install it. So I say npm install. Okay. It looks. It says, hey, you need Express. It installs Express. And now I'm back to the races, ready to run my app.
And did it recreate the Node modules folder?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, awesome.
Yep, and there's a little trick too. If you look at the package.json file, you'll see that there's also right now empty this thing called dev dependencies. These are things that you only need while you're a developer, while you're developing this thing. And right now that's empty, but you could put things like grunt and gulp and these other utilities that you only use while you're developing as dependencies in there. And you do that by saying install something like gulp, and then you say save dev. And now that means save that into my dev dependencies. And now when you do that, it's going to install gulp and save that as a dev dependency. There it goes. Now let's go ahead and remove that node modules folder. Okay, so it's gone. My app is broken. It doesn't work right now because it doesn't have its dependencies. But if I say npm install, it's going to install everything. I don't want to install everything. Like maybe I'm on my production server. I only want Express. I don't need gulp right now. So I can say npm install production, and now it's only going to install Express. Because if I type out this package.json file, you can see that gulp is inside of the dev dependencies.
Nifty. Okay, cool. That's so useful now.
Okay, so then there's one more type of require that we should probably look at. So I'm going to jump back to Visual Studio Code, and you saw that I did a require by way of a core module, a require by way of a module that's, you know, out there in NPM. And remember, we didn't have it at first. We had to install it. And then I can also require a local module. And this the syntax looks exactly the same. I'm going to say var my module equals require my module. Now, instead of just saying my module, I need to prefix this with dot slash, okay? And that actually indicates what kind of require this is, what kind of module it should be looking for. It says, I'm not going to look for a core module, and I'm not going to look for a module in the node modules folder. I'm going to look in this other location. As a matter of fact, what it's going to do is it's going to say, I'm going to look for a JS file. And if I don't find that, I'm going to look for a JSON file. And in fact, if it doesn't find that, it's going to look for a node file. And it'll even look for a file with no suffix at all. And it'll use that as the file. Okay? So there's my module. Let's hit save there. Now, in Visual Studio Code here, I can just go to this working files or this playing around folder, either one, and I can say, I want a new file. And in this case, I want this to be called mymodule.js. So I'm going to create a file that has a JS extension, even though I'm requiring it without the JS extension. So here's my module. Now I can write whatever JavaScript I want in here, but there's just a little bit of Node specific stuff that has to happen. And it's really easy. You basically just say module.exports, and then you get to set that to whatever you want. So I could set that to a string, and that's what it's going to return as the result of this module, okay? So let's just set that to a string. And now my module is going to become, because I'm requiring my module, it's going to become the string foo. All right?
Okay. So is this kind of like if I were writing a class in like an object-oriented language and I wanted to create something large, like a huge game object, And then if I just did module export the like the return of that huge game object or that huge method for calculating score or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can return whatever you want. You can return just a static value, or you can return a function that's able to calculate your value, or you can return kind of whatever you want here. So
Okay.
right now, we're just returning a string, which is, probably not very useful. In this case, it's just kind of taking some logic and putting it somewhere else and making it a module, but that thing doesn't do anything very exciting. But let's actually debug this. I'm going to set a breakpoint here. We saw earlier how to debug, so I'll just hit F5 and debug, and we'll stop at this breakpoint, and let me hover on this. There it is. It equals foo.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Okay, that's
Now let's go
awesome.
back and modify it, because normally people don't just set it to a flat value like that. We'll go ahead and leave our breakpoint there. People don't just set it to a flat value like that, but instead they return not a simple value, but they will return a function. This
Right.
is very common. It's a very common pattern for module design, is to return a function. Now let's say this function returns foo. Okay, so I'll save that. I'll go back to my app.js and I'll hit F5 and it'll run it. And now here I am broken, and I look at this mo my module, and lo and behold, it is a function. Okay, so now let's stop this and let's console log out a call to my module. Now remember, my module is a function, so we can call it like this and it returns foo. So if we're right, then this should write out foo to the screen. It'll break there. We'll go ahead and run it. We'll go look at that, and lo and behold, it has output to the console the word foo. Okay, so
Nice.
now let's go ahead and wrap this up. But this one page that we jumped to in the Node.js documentation, you should actually, pro if you're trying to learn Node, you should definitely go look at this one. It talks about, if you go to the modules and you look at the module object, this is a really good document that tells you exactly how this works. Okay, it tells you, as a matter of fact, if you scroll down, it tells you the concepts of a module, and bear with it at first, because at first it's a little bit heady and a little bit difficult. But if you go down far enough, it'll tell you exactly how it loads. And let me get there. Wait for it, wait for it. It shows you the logic right here, all together. This is the logic for how it loads things. First, it says, is this a core module? Well, then return the core module. That's the first one that we did. If it's not a core module, then it looks to see if it begins with a dot slash, like we did for our local one, and then it loads it as a file. You can also load an entire directory. We didn't look at that. And if that's not the case, then it's going to load it as a module, and this walks you all the way through all the logic, and this is really helpful to understand exactly what's going on there. So back to code, and there we go. We've covered the three different kinds of modules that you can retire and that you can require. And then inside your app, you basically just do whatever you want with those. They may be really elaborate, really helpful modules that do a whole bunch of stuff and makes your code very little on top of it, just the utilization of it. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. So now I can figure out, like, instead of just putting everything in this huge file that I have to scroll down a lot and everything is called back on and it's a bunch of JavaScript, using modules, it can kind of separate out everything and kind of make it more digestible, I
Yeah,
guess.
exactly. In fact, one of the things I use it for is I'll put a config.js file right here. And then in my config.js, I'll say module exports equals. And then I want this to be an object with a bunch of things. So I'm going to have config value or variable one. And the value is one. And then config variable two, where the value is two, and that's plenty. So these are things that when somebody is using this module, I want them to be able to go edit this config file and just have these things. And so now in my app, I can say var config equals
There
require
we go.
config. And now in my app, I'm able to say something like, I want to do an HTTP GET to the web service. And which web service is it? It's config dot, and look at that. It's even looked into that, and IntelliSense has told me, I recognize that you have a config module locally, and it has config variable one, so it allows me to choose that. So now I don't have these magic strings in my code here. They're all in a config file, and I can bring those in.
Right. And would you recommend, like, or do you know of people who have online, like, common modules that they've kind of use all the time? Or I guess those are the NPM modules, like, that were local modules that everyone started using and then
So
not
yeah,
really.
when people find what I would call those utility functions, when you find out that there's a few things that you like to use, you can put those into a utility library, but some of those already exist, and I think that the most popular one is Lodash. And it's really just a collection of all kinds of things that make your life easier in your code. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that Lodash is the most depended upon package in the NPM repository.
Oh, wow.
For that
Okay.
reason alone, yeah, it's a really good library.
I guess I
So,
should look into that.
yeah. So, yeah, and that's, by the way, that's spelled Lodash.
Got
So,
it.
I suggest, Kat, that we next time look at, I mean, this will get you started in a Node app, but man, when you bring in something like Express or HTTP, there are some really awesome things that you can do with it, like create a web server in just one line of code. You can create a website and very easily define what should happen when your user comes to your website with slash foo or slash bar or whatever by defining routes and those just resolve to simple functions that you write. So there's some really fun stuff. I think that's what we should cover next time.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds great. I'm excited.
Awesome. Well, for everybody that's joining us, thanks for watching, and feel free to submit some questions to either Kat or myself so that we can use those in the course of recording the show.
Yeah. Thank you guys, and thank you, Jeremy. This brain dump of Node has been super educational.
Good. See ya.
Bye.